Humanity Radio broadcast with your host, Spread Love, on Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4pm Eastern Time, Studio A.
Thank everybody for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the one place where information never sleeps. Revolution, Revolution Radio!
Hello and welcome to Operation Scorpio. Today's date is Saturday, March 19, 2022. And welcome to the free-range open-air insane asylum we call Earth. Well, guys, here we are. Here we are watching the construction of a war narrative in real time, and it's almost like traveling back in time and experience what Americans were subjected to in terms of war propaganda in the build-up to World War II and World War I, for that matter. Yes, the evil Germans, the Nazis, the Yellow Menace, the Nips. Oh, yeah. And, of course, now we have Vlad the Impaler Putin. Oh, yeah, he's mean. He's bad, and he's blowing up cities for no reason at all. Women and children are his primary targets, and he must be stopped at all costs, even if it means we destroy the economies of the West. It's worth it, guys. And, of course, Groper Joe is enacting all kinds of sanctions against Russia and essentially shooting America in the foot and waiting for the Russians to cry out in pain. And remember, guys, you know, Russia doesn't only produce gas and oil. It produces a huge amount of agricultural fertilizer, wheat and grains, and several exotic metals that are used in the production of catalytic converters and other car parts. And of course now Groper Joe and his merry band of international elves are threatening China with sanctions if they support Russia. Even though, if you recall, just recently Russia and China stood on the world stage during the Olympics, no less, and declared that their alliance knows no bounds. That's what they said, guys. Amazing. Just amazing. And isn't it interesting how the West is going all in on this conflict all over a fairly insignificant country in Eastern Europe, at least in terms of, you know, what we're supposed to think are geopolitical terms. And if I didn't know better, I'd think that someone was deliberately trying to bring down the West, the economy of the West. Yeah, it is a, yeah, it's a puppet show, guys. It's a puppet show. And, you know, calling Putin a war criminal, that's certainly calling, you know, the pot calling the kettle black, isn't it? I mean, my God, what's the list of countries we've invaded and destroyed? NATO even bombing the Great Water Project in Libya, essentially destroying the whole country. Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, the list goes on. But Vladimir Putin's the war criminal, guys. It's just, how do people believe any of this crap? It really is hypocrisy on parade. And such talk doesn't really leave a lot of room for de-escalation, does it? Because really everything the West is doing right now is designed to exacerbate the situation and escalate it. There hasn't been a single word of de-escalation, not one. And instead, we see all of our Congress critters suddenly wearing Ukrainian lapel pins alongside their American and Israeli lapel pins overnight. Just like, you know, all of these foundations to help Ukraine just sort of sprung up within a week. You got to wonder how you fill out the paperwork for something like that in a week. And you got to wonder, where is that money really going? So basically, guys, you can't try and negotiate peace while providing arms and billions of dollars to one side. I mean, you don't have to be a geopolitical, you know, genius to figure that one out, do you? And, you know, really, if you think about it, isolationism and self-sufficiency should be the American stance moving forward. It really should. But of course, that is not going to happen because, well, the international Jew has taken the helm of our ship. And from what I see, it's deliberately steering it right into the rocks. Deliberately steering our civilization into the rocks. And really, guys, all that is missing now is a modern-day Pearl Harbor. I think those were the words used by the PNAC group before 9/11. Oh, yes. All that's missing is an incubator baby moment where incubator babies are being thrown onto the floor. And I believe we are perilously close to just such a moment. And just this morning, I was monitoring the enemy war transmissions known as the mainstream media, and there were several references that they're worried that Vladimir Putin may lash out and use chemical or biological weapons because Ukraine is winning the war. Oh, really? Amazing. So they're putting that on the table here. They're getting that seed planted in people's minds that Vlad the Impaler Putin might resort to chemical or biological weapons. And of course, that would necessitate America or NATO getting directly involved in this conflict. And let's be honest, guys, you know, NATO was really just an extension of the American Empire's military. And you get right down to it, because America pays the lion's share of that bill of NATO. And NATO really has been an archaic relic of the Cold War since, what, 1991, 92? And now it finally has a reason to exist, or at least we're being told they do. NATO has long been a solution in search of a problem. And guys, did you happen to catch Zelensky's address to the Canadian Parliament and the American Congress, receiving a 3-minute standing ovation? That looked awfully scripted. It's just my view there, guys. And when was the last time someone got, you know, like a 3-minute standing ovation? Well, I believe it was Benjamin Netanyahu addressing Congress after 9/11, fanning the flames of war. Interesting how that works, isn't it? And the Zelensky character is really trying to push the West into a so-called no-fly zone and push the West directly into this conflict. And if you think about it, you know, what's going on in Ukraine is akin to a civil war. That's really the closest thing that you might compare to, is a civil war. And the idea that, you know, Ukraine is some kind of sovereign nation that its borders are sacrosanct, it's absurd. It really, really is, if you look at it in the context of history. And more importantly, it's none of our business. And maybe you guys caught a little bit of that emotionally charged movie. And that's what it was, a movie that Zelensky showed Congress. You know, highly produced, good production value, and full of fake footage. Some of it taken from Ukrainian military exercises. Some of the footage apparently was even from other parts of the world, with, you know, lots of footage of course, crying women and children, you know, designed to manipulate our minds and tug at the heartstrings of America. And, you know, an American was behind this movie, because, you know, Zelensky even invoked Pearl Harbor, 9/11, and Martin Luther King Jr. How about that, guys? You know, looks like someone knows the right buttons to push. And this, you know, all of this focus on civilian suffering after 20 years of smart bombs and collateral damage, and 20 years of really not a single mention of civilian suffering or casualties. It's just amazing that how they can sort of change the perception by what they focus on. And we're all supposed to react to it and believe it. And guys, remember the 500,000 Iraqi children that died of malnutrition and lack of medicine because of the embargo on Iraq? But it was worth it, right, guys? Anyway, that's what Madeleine Albright said shortly before she realized that she was Jewish. You know, at the age of 60-something years old, oh, my God, I'm Jewish. I had no idea. Wow. How'd that happen? But what a callous statement. That's just, of course, been memory hold. Not supposed to think about that, are we? No. And now, in latest news, Zelensky is saying it's time to talk. It's time to talk, guys. And I'm just amazed at how the media is just, again, a cheerleader for war. That's about all they are, a cheerleader for war, urging the Ukrainians to fight to the last man, or they're going to lose everything. Really? I don't think so. But not joining NATO and the EU is losing everything? I mean, these people in the mainstream media really do have blood on their hands. And so does Zelensky, sending untrained civilians to go fight against the Russian army. But anyway, Zelensky's saying it's time to talk. And instead of offering some kind of middle ground in his little speech, he is threatening Russia. He's threatening Russia, saying that if this war continues, it will take several generations for Russia to recover. Several generations. That's quite a threat, isn't it? And he said that it's time to restore Ukrainian territorial sovereignty. Them's fighting words, guys. Those aren't the words of a man looking to compromise. And, you know, I've heard several interviews with this Ukrainian ambassador to the United States. And she has made it very clear that a good part of the reason that Ukraine is fighting is the right to join NATO and the EU. And, you know, apparently, after this color revolution in 2014, they rewrote their constitution after this color revolution, and it's actually in their constitution that they intend to join NATO. And guys, you know, the idea that Ukraine is some kind of democracy is fallacious as well. You know, Zelensky has arrested journalists. Oh yeah, he's arrested journalists, and he's shut down dissenting newspapers. And he's even arrested the leader of the, you know, the majority opposing party, whatever that's called. That guy's in jail. But of course, you're not going to hear about any of that on the enemy war transmissions known as the mainstream media. And as I watched, you know, part of his little speech the other day, urging for a no-fly zone, I couldn't help but notice that, you know, on his, you know, sort of army style camo t-shirt, there was an Iron Cross emblem on it. And what's up with that, guys? You know, I thought the Iron Cross was a symbol of hate and intolerance. But our newest manufactured hero, and that's what he is, a manufactured hero. Here he is wearing the Iron Cross on his t-shirt. So I guess all these rules of hate and intolerance are quite fluid depending on who is being examined. And remember, guys, you know, don't react to the puppet show or the puppets on the stage. You know, don't react to the puppet show. What's important is looking at the agenda that's being rolled out onto the world stage. That is what we have to be focused on, not the puppets or the puppet show that we're supposed to react to emotionally. And as we are subjected to this barrage of war propaganda, you know, that's designed to get inside our minds and manipulate our thinking based on emotion, you know, we should all remember this, the famous quote from Henry Kissinger, who some people claim that his accent is fake. He doesn't even really talk that way in real life. Could be true, guys. Kissinger said that truth does not matter. Perception does. Truth does not matter. Perception does. And of course, in my view, this is very evil and dangerous international elf thinking. It really is. It's very dangerous. But it's precisely how those in power think and how they operate. It's a very insightful comment. And it is truly evil thinking. But regardless, it is emblematic of how this system really works. And it's something to contemplate because its implications, you know, reverberate all over the political landscape, not only in our country, the United States, but all around the world. And guys, I'm coming to the conclusion that this war is nothing more than a big distraction, a giant shit show for us to watch as they slowly dismantle the economy of the West. That's what's really going on, guys. It's kind of like, you know, we're all out there standing outside and we're looking at this giant skyscraper, right? And everything looks good from the outside. It looks strong, sturdy. But meanwhile, on the inside, they are disconnecting the support beams one by one. So everything looks just fine from the outside until the building begins to collapse. And of course, by that point, it's too late. I think that's what's going on here, guys. Termites are eating away our civilization while we are swept away by emotion, by a distraction, this war in Ukraine, which really should have no impact on our lives whatsoever, you know, if it wasn't for the overreaction of Western governments. It's a matter between Russia and Ukraine, and the West should be working on a peace settlement, not funding and arming one side and filling the airwaves with incendiary remarks. And they're really trying to make it sound like, you know, the mainstream media is trying to make it sound like if Ukraine surrenders, they lose everything. As though if they surrender, Vladimir Putin's just going to level the entire country and kill everybody. And of course, that isn't what would happen. Ukraine would just go back under the influence of Russia. And that's the way it's always been. Like it or not, that's the history of the country. And if you look at Ukraine on the map, it really is the gateway or the entrance to so many other Eastern Bloc countries. You know, I think that's one of the reasons why the international elf is so interested in Ukraine, because if they can convert Ukraine to the global homo empire, they'll have access to a whole bunch of other countries right there to spread their poison, essentially, their cultural poison. So you can see why Russia might be upset by all this, but again, it's the timing of all this that bothers me the most. This conflict has been brewing for 8 years. And we really have to ask ourselves, why was the trigger pulled at the very moment that the COVID hoax narrative was truly unraveling like a cheap sweater. I can't get over that one. It's a little too much of a coincidence for me. And the other thing that bothers me is look at how many, you know, parts of the Great Reset, so to speak, are being fulfilled by this conflict. You know, we have the disrupting of the supply chain, which of course has been implanted into our minds slowly, because all of a sudden they're not able to unload those cargo ships. Wow, it's funny how that happens. But this is going to further exacerbate that, and it's going to potentially even bleed into the food supply chain. The food supply chain, that is significant. But it's worth it, right? We have to defend Ukraine at all costs. And as the economy slows down due to this separation of economies and the restriction of trade, we're going to see less need for employment. And as fuel costs rise, obviously that's going to, you know, increase the cost of everything. And so this might provide the opportunity for corporations to start cutting labor. But this time, it could very well be mid-management that goes on the chopping block as they implement AI algorithms to make decisions. A lot of mid-management positions are very replaceable by algorithms right now. I think they're just waiting for the right moment to break the news to the public, so to speak. And of course, cutting off all of this energy from Russia will increase the cost of energy, obviously, and it's going to cause shrieks and cries for green energy. We have no choice now. We see how dangerous oil is and how precarious it is to be an oil-based economy. We need more windmills, guys. And of course, if you look into the green agenda, it's a disastrous idea designed to fail and bring down the economies of any country that gets too heavily involved in it. And of course, remember this, guys, the most important takeaway about the green energy model is that it only works if the population is greatly decreased. Otherwise, it's just pie-in-the-sky bullshit that's, you know, really designed to take a wrecking ball to Western economies. And then another sort of tenet of the Great Reset that we see being enacted right now because of this conflict is we're seeing the role of government being slowly taken over by corporations, or at the very least, corporations are walking in lockstep with the government and doing the dirty work for the government agenda. You know, just walking in lockstep again, just like they did during Operation COVID Hoax. Because here we've seen what, 200 plus big corporations suddenly pull out of Russia. Over 200 corporations all together making the same decision, having the same political stance, the same worldview, and doing the dirty work of the government, acting in accordance with government wishes. And what we're seeing is that the two entities, government and corporate America, world corporations, are beginning to act as one. And then, of course, by removing Russia from the SWIFT system, and this is probably the most devastating part of all of this and a very important part of the Great Reset. By removing Russia from SWIFT, the West is actually helping to bring about the end of the petrodollar at an ever-increasing rate. And just the other day, Saudi Arabia and China are actually working together to begin the de-dollarization of oil deals between the two nations. That alone is huge, and it's happening all at the same time that Russia is being removed from SWIFT and thus being removed from the petrodollar. And what, here's the thing, guys. Once dollar inflation can no longer be spread around the world, we're going to see dollar inflation in the United States like we have never imagined. And of course, that's already begun, hasn't it? Yeah. And in closing, I want to read just a little tidbit I came across from the Homeland Security Terrorism Bulletin that was released just a few days ago. I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's incredibly boring. So I'm just going to skip to the meat of the bulletin. So it goes, you know, blah, blah, blah. These threat actors seek to exacerbate social friction, to sow discord, to undermine public trust in government institutions, to encourage unrest, which could potentially increase acts of violence. So much speculation within that one, that somehow if we don't believe what the government is telling us to do, it will result in increased acts of violence. If this isn't an overt attack on free speech and political dissent, I don't know what is, guys. And the only term they left out is hate speech. That's a big part of the agenda, too, labeling things they don't like as hate speech. And with that said, I would like to bring on my main man and my partner in crime, Mr. Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Giuseppe, how are you, sir?
I'm living the dream, Dave. What a great intro, man. You covered all the bases. You know, the whole, it is getting absurd how the internationalist elf is, all in to try and solidify their Great Reset, their New World Order, their one world government based in Jerusalem with the Third Temple, all that nutty satanic horse shit. And they, it's cartoon like how they're trying to make Ukraine into Nazis and everybody's a Nazi. I mean, there's that meme where, Spider-Man from different universes and times are all pointing to each other like, and that's what this is. You're a Nazi. You're a Nazi. I mean, the bottom line there is that the Jew cannot possibly allow real nationalism to take place, and that's why they are attacking it, when in the reality, the only real beneficial government form for any of us real people is nationalist, populist countries with leadership that serve their population, not the synagogue of Satan.
Yes. Yeah. It's really, it's just staggering. And then hearing the little man, the little big man Zelensky threaten Russia, like saying it's time to talk. And then he actually threatens Russia, saying it's going to take several generations for Russia to recover from this, and saying it's time to restore Ukrainian territorial sovereignty. Those are not the words of a man who is seeking any kind of solution. You know, I'm just amazed at how they're really sending as many people into the war grinder as they can.
Yeah.
with this false premise that if Ukraine surrenders, all is lost. Really? Does that mean what Vladimir Putin is just going to kill everybody and flatten the whole country? I mean, it's incredible how they really are. We're just seeing this shriek and this march towards war that I don't think we've seen in any of our lifetimes.
Well, I don't know that I necessarily agree. I remember, and you probably remember too, the insane march towards war for the first Iraq invasion. I mean, that was, the media was just as bad. I mean, at least there were opposing voices then. Now there are no opposing voices in the Jew-controlled media and the Jew-controlled government and the Jew-controlled academia and the Jew-controlled corporations. So all of them want their Jew world order. And, you know, for the last 2 years, we had the bubonic plague, which was gain of function bioweapons developed and funded basically with their Jesuit minion Tony the Rat Fauci, but the real work was clearly done by the Pfizer, Moderna, all those subhuman soulless Jews that are trying to believe they have the acumen to hack the genetic code and make humans into some type of weird transhuman cyborg mutant, which they absolutely don't have the skill to do, and they're just experimenting on the population. If there was any sane government, any sane leadership, that they would be going to war against that. And instead, you know, Putin seems to be playing along, and yet they're now in cartoon, comic book, lame, child book fashion trying to set up Putin as Hitler 2.0, which is laughable. I mean, as we've said even yesterday on the show, we're not sure if he's in on it or not. But if he's not, he is being set up to be taken down, which is really messed up. So I just don't understand that whole Putin thing at all, especially the timing, as you observed in your introduction.
Yeah, that's a good point. You made some good points there, Giuseppe. And, you know, during the Iraq War, there were actual, you know, anti-war voices going on.
Yep.
From the left, primarily, of course.
Right. Yeah.
But that's gone now. That's been replaced by, this quest to force homosexuality and transgenderism on the entire world. And, you know, not just allowing it, but encouraging it and making it a virtue somehow. You know, it's one thing to allow it and say, well, yeah, that's always been a certain, you know, minority of people that are that way. Let them be, versus encouraging it and actually trying to propagandize children with it. It's shocking, really. But yeah, there's no anti-war movement at all this time. That's a very good point. And it's quite shocking. And, you know, and I just want to bring up one other thing,
yeah,
you know, on the after burn, on your show, after we left the air on Revolution Radio, you know, we talked about Vladimir Putin a little bit with Robert, you know, who's an astrologer, Robert Phoenix,
right,
your guest last night. And everyone should go on there and check out your the archive on that. It was a really interesting interview.
What a fascinating and brilliant guy he is, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so I was trying to tap his mind a little bit about, well, you know, because we're all kind of on the fence about Vladimir Putin and what his role is in this. I'm not going to react to the puppet show or the puppets and, you know, join behind one of them. But
right,
it's interesting how, you know, I asked Robert, well, what's your take on Putin, you know, from an astrological point of view? And he said, well, he's a hard read because, his chart is very mysterious. And I thought that was interesting. It's hard to get a read on him astrologically.
Yeah. He said, so almost all his planets are in the 12th house, and, I intend to use the code and get the 50% off of Robert's astrology class that he has. I'd like to know more what that actually means. I always meant to, but I've never really looked into it. But, I mean, he is such an interesting guy. I'd like to – if anybody could teach me, I think he could. So, yeah, it's really fascinating, Dave, that, you know, he said on his show, and he's going to come back on one of our shows next month in April and talk about the charts overlaid of Biden, Putin, and Zelensky, and he said it's really interesting. So that'll be a very cool deep dive in the next month or two.
Oh, wow. What's the, can you give us a little sneak peek? Do you remember what he said about the three charts?
He didn't give us any taste. He just said, I did that, and it's really interesting. That's all he just said. That's all
right.
He said. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, what's really tragic, Dave, is to me, the linchpin of all this weak-minded, obedience and compliance by the American and many of the first world normies is the introduction of social media. There's something about that if you do not have a strong spiritual practice, a disciplined mind, it sucks you in. And you know, they've been trying those mass media techniques, which are effective for weak minds. And sadly, especially most Americans have an incredibly weak mind. They're just so vacuous and shallow and so easily manipulated. It's embarrassing to be an American in many ways. And so, but there were still, like you said, with the Iraq war, there were real people saying this is ridiculous. And now when Putin is actually doing something right, because the vile, soulless synagogue of Satan, their outpost number two, where they're doing their worst work, is the Ukraine, right? They did that color revolution, which was essentially inserting Jews to control the Ukraine in 2014, done by traitorous American Jews like Victoria Nudelman Kagan and other traitors loyal to the Rothschilds in Israel. And nobody talks about that. And it's actually a mocking installation of that clown Zelensky. He's just a comedian, a homosexual comedian who plays the piano with his penis and dresses up in S&M leather gear and does dances. And so this, you know, that's the Satanist oligarch's way of mocking that country, is to install this clown. And for all these people like, oh, Ukraine, oh, they're such victims. It's just like the Bishop Richard Williamson. I've got to cut that clip down to just a 30 seconds when he goes, oh, the Holocaust chocolate. You know, they can't even think straight. I mean, they've been building on this mind rape and this mind control since literally the 60s when they started to roll out the whole Holocaust psyop. And it's so effective, but there used to be a lot of skeptical people. But since social media, they're drying up like a puddle in the desert.
Oh, wait, I lost audio with you, Giuseppe.
Huh, that's weird.
Oh, there you go. Now you're back. Okay.
Okay. Oh, okay. Well, I was just wrapping up anyway. Did you hear the whole statement?
I missed the very end of it. Maybe you could repeat it.
You know, I said it's the sane people who have the ability to critical think are drying up since the advent of social media like a puddle in the desert.
Yeah, it does encourage narcissism. And, you know, I think what we're seeing, too, here is the merger of show business and politics. You know, we're seeing more and more where you take an actor who's well-trained and, you know, like they cast Zelensky in this role of a politician or being the president in some TV show. Then here he is now, he's president. And, you know, similar thing with Trump. He was like, you're fired. He's like the, you know, the guy everyone has to answer to
exactly.
For years. And then he's president. So we're seeing the merger of show business and politics. And I just want to thank everybody in the chat on the Twitch feed and all the Facebook and all that. Such great comments. And Magic City is saying that the Bank of International Settlements has frozen Russia's accounts. Now, I haven't heard this, but I assume it's true. That is significant. That's huge. What's your take on that, Giuseppe?
If it's true, that really shows that they're forcing Putin into World War III. That's messed up.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You know, we don't get people posting fake things in the chat very often, so I'm assuming that's true. That's a huge development. Maybe he could put a link in there or something.
Well, I know they publicly said that they kicked Russia out of the SWIFT system. So
right.
It would follow that they might kick them out of the BIS. But, you know, I mean, the real goal of the Synagogue of Satan is to bring down, you know, they've bled out all the wealth of the United States, and so now they want to take it down. They've artificially created the United States as the vile, soulless, Jew, Heinrich Kissinger with the petrodollar scam. So, and they managed to destroy our complete, self-sufficiency manufacturing base, and they've transferred quadrillions of wealth from decent people, destroyed the working class, destroyed the bottom half, or 70% of the middle class, and they're trying to drive everyone now into this new, initially a bipolar system, and then ultimately, that'll lead to Beijing and Jerusalem as the two bases of global governance, and then, you know, just like that movie from the 80s, Highlander, there can be only one. And so then it'll be Jerusalem, right? So, I mean, why sane people in this world have not realized the warrior class needs to eliminate these demons and these parasites from the face of this earth, and the rest of us could work it out? I do not understand that. I mean, where is the warrior class?
Yeah, the parasitical elite class really is non-essential to our civilization.
Right.
And you know, Neil Roberts just said that the G7 has frozen all Russian assets in their countries. That's amazing. And, of course, Russia has actually said that any real estate or property left behind from all these countries or companies that pulled out of Russia are going to be nationalized. So this thing keeps escalating. And, you know, it's really what's interesting here to me is it's the government reactions to what's going on rather than the actual event that's causing all the problems.
Yeah, man, that's a really excellent point. And, you know, it's clown world. I mean, we are literally living in clown world. I still believe that a majority of this country has some ability to function in a sane manner. Yet why aren't they? How do they fall for this deception, this psyop that's, oh, Ukraine. I mean, war is ugly, but the Jew has fomented this war. I mean, you know, what is the North American Treaty Organization, which is in reality is the mercenary private security force of the Rothschild criminal cabal, satanic cabal? Why are they growing up until Russia's border? Why are they, install that weird homo puppet Zelensky, as the leader? And, you know, why aren't people reacting to that? Why in 2014? I mean, I thought it was a farce when, that psycho soulless bitch, Noodleman Kagan pulled that off. I thought it was ridiculous. It showed how evil, Barry Suerto, another homosexual was to allow that to happen. And it shows what a puppet he was. But the funny thing is the Synagogue of Satan, the global homo, the Jew just wants other deviants to do their work for the ultimate deviant, the ultimate soulless satanic parasite, which is the Jew. I mean, it's just so obvious, and yet, oh, you're a hater, man. You're an anti-Semite. Well, why don't you wake up and see what's going on? It's plain as day to Scorpio, myself, and probably most of the people who watch these shows and enter into the chat rooms. Why does the average normie, oh, it's so bad for the Ukraine? Well, sure, any type of war is an abomination and shouldn't exist. And yet, you know, why can't you even see the flippant narrative for what it really is? That's what just bugs the shit out of me, honestly.
Yeah, and we're supposed to be so caught up in the puppet show that we don't see the agenda that's being unveiled before us.
Yeah.
And Giuseppe, what are your thoughts on this? You know, as I said in the intro, I've been hearing, you know, more than a few times by the enemy war transmissions known as the mainstream media that Russia may be forced to use chemical or biological weapons because Putin is being cornered and the Ukrainians are winning the war, don't you know? Putin might have to lash out with these chemical or biological weapons, which would probably be a false flag. And of course, then somehow, because, you know, that's so much worse than dropping bombs on people, you know, and blowing people up. That's a red line in the sand that you can't cross. That means we have to go in and, you know, NATO or America has to go in and get directly involved in this, which to me is insane. What's the difference in the end? You end up killing people. But what's your thoughts on this possibility of a false flag, you know, blaming it on Russia? Oh, they did chemical or biological weapons. You know, let's go fight. Let's you and them fight. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I think you're absolutely right. I think that according to a couple of different sources on the ground that I follow in the Ukraine, they put up daily emails and Russia is winning this war easily, and they are just about there's a dude who's there who says it's all going to be over by April 30th. And they'll have cleaned it all out. So I think that the desperate minions of the Synagogue of Satan will certainly release chemical or biological weapons, which they just did 2 years ago to create the bubonic scamdemic, and they will blame it on Putin. And there is their justification their justification to create a hot World War III, which is a nightmare scenario. Yet that's what the soulless minions of Satan live for, is to create nightmare scenarios. So.
Right. And I've been saying for a while that we're going to see one crisis after another here, and that's how they're going to get their new system in place. And the chatter, Magic City, put the link there about the BIS.
Oh, I'll have to click on that.
Russia.
Sure. Yeah.
So that's huge. This thing keeps getting escalated essentially separating economies and disrupting world trade. And
so that was March 10th, that article. Wow, so that's 9 days ago. Holy cow.
Amazing how little focus that got, isn't it? Gee.
That's a game changer.
International settlements is rarely mentioned anywhere, yet it's the central bank of central banks. It's sort of the force that all central banks have to answer to. Fascinating.
It's heartbreaking to see how many decent, good-hearted people are such dipshits, you know, and going along with this. It's just really what can you do?
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, in just a few minutes, we're going to bring on Mr. Mike Gatti, the rebel madman himself, and hopefully Daryl Wayne as well. He's got some real life things he has to take care of. I hate it when that happens.
He sent a message that he is available for the entire show.
Oh, great. Excellent. That's wonderful.
That's good news.
Yeah. But we're going to have both these gentlemen on. And, you know, what I love about Mike and Daryl is they both bring really different things to the table.
Right.
And the combination of the two is just like a tour de force. But in this coming hour, next hour, we're going to be delving into a highly controversial subject, and a subject that some may say is full of hate, but it's actually examining the secret relationship between blacks and Jews. And this is a four-volume set published by the Nation of Islam that, you know, has – incredible documentation. And so Mike has read the whole thing and gone over it with a fine tooth comb, and he's going to give us sort of a historical perspective of this and what it actually means. And then of course Daryl will give his analysis as well. So what are your thoughts on this very hateful topic, Giuseppe?
Well, I think that the Nation of Islam, and I downloaded the PDFs. There's some free ones floating around. Of the first one came out in, like, I don't know, 96 or something. And that's this one, the volume one. And then they build on additional information. And then the latest one they released was, the Leo Frank case, which we focus on all the time, is such a farce. And it's amazing how they go in depth. And, you know, I'll tell you what, there'd be nothing greater than for the American black to wake up And much like supposedly the allegory of St. Patrick driving the snakes out of Ireland, Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson can drive the Jew out of America, and that would be very cool.
Well, yeah, and of course there's been a tremendous effort to keep, you know, black folks on the plantation of the government teat, rather than, you know, kind of looking at information like this. And, you know, the source of information, we really shouldn't let that influence how we feel about it. What is important is the information. And, you know, I've met some of those guys in the Nation of Islam years ago.
Yeah, me too.
I used to talk to them. They used to hand out copies of their newspaper.
Yep.
Back when I lived in Florida.
Yeah.
And they were selling these bean pies and, handing out copies of their newspaper, which was definitely addressing the question of Jewish power. And those guys are always really respectful. And, it's not like we were going to be best friends, but we had good conversations. And I got to say, those guys had their shit together. You know, they were pretty solid. You got to give credit where credit's due.
Well, the first time I moved to DC in 87, I used to live a block away from the real Washington Post when it was still a halfway decent newspaper. And you get off the metro, and I had some great conversations with Nation of Islam representatives and with Hare Krishna representatives. It was awesome, man. It was really cool. You'd come home from work, get off the metro, and then come up the steps, and there would they all be. And so if I wasn't in a bad mood, I would sit there and take their stuff and talk with them. And they were very cool people, really, really bright. And you know, when you effectively research something, I don't care what your point of view is, I will look into and consider your data. And their data is spot on.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
What the heck is the Truth Jihad? Hey, I'm Kevin Barrett, host of Truth Jihad Radio. Federal prosecutors, Department of Homeland Security agents, and curious passersby often ask me, just what is this Truth Jihad thing anyway? Well, everybody knows what truth is, but jihad is a misunderstood term. Jihad means effort or struggle. The greater jihad is the struggle to be a better person, while the lesser jihad is the struggle to defend the community. Prophet Muhammad, peace upon him, did say that the best jihad is a word of truth flung in the face of a tyrant. And that's what we do here at Truth Jihad Radio. Every Friday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, 5 to 7 Pacific, right here on Revolution Radio.
Hey everyone, it's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Hey guys, Scorpio here. Join me every Saturday at 2 p.m. here on Studio A for the Scorpio Conspiracy Show, where we discuss the hidden agendas that impact our lives and uncover the secret societies and the shadowy elite who construct the reality that we are supposed to believe. So be there Saturdays, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, here on Studio A on Revolution Radio, and learn what's really going down.
Lost a little honey on the lone highway. Left it for another on the lone highway. They killed Dirty Don McGee on the lone highway.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the Internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution, Revolution. Radio! The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Okay, welcome back to hour number two of Operation Scorpio. And in this hour, we are going to tackle a very controversial subject with the rebel madman himself, Mr. Mike Gatti, and Daryl Wayne. We're going to go into the slave trade and who was behind it, who owned it, who controlled it, as well as other things. And first of all, let me welcome our two guests, Mike Gatti and Daryl Wayne. Gentlemen, how are you guys doing?
Doing very well, Dave. We got a real echo problem here, at least on my end.
Okay.
I'm going to drop off and come back on. Daryl, how are you doing? And Giuseppe, bring me back on. Okay, I'll be right back.
Yeah. To be here with you guys, and we can it was a great intro for my Scorpio there. It
sure
it
was.
Appears that the ludicrous drive has been fully kicked into overdrive. So,
man, that's great. Did the echo go away? I disconnected and reconnected Rev Radio Skype. Did that help at all? All right. I usually don't. Mike, did it help? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. But I'm hearing myself echo, so I'm going to drop out and come back.
Okay, here's Scorpio.
Yeah.
Okay.
Am I getting
an echo?
Dave, are you getting an echo? Echo?
I don't know. No, I think I'm okay.
Okay, good. I just disconnected and reconnected. You have a bad echo, Daryl?
Yeah, let me drop out and come back in.
Yeah. Yeah, and maybe we should all put on headphones.
Yeah, earbuds or headphones help for sure. That's necessary. Let's see. Here's Mike back. Did that help, Mike?
Yes, sir. A lot better.
Okay, great. So maybe, yeah, if DW could go to a headset and headphones, that would be good too. When he pops back in. So yeah, let's see. Dave's getting headphones. So let me put, there he is. All right. So there's.
Yeah. Okay. Mike, you know, I don't want to eat up too much time, before we hit our main topic here, but let me get your take just briefly on, you know, this grand puppet show the war in Ukraine. And, you know, what do you think is going on here? And what do you think the possibility of some kind of a false flag being mounted? And then, you know, oh, the Russians used chemical weapons. We're going to have to go in with NATO and American troops. What are your thoughts on this kind of escalation? And what do you think is really going on here?
Well, I think that's a very astute observation, Dave, because it was mentioned in the American press that Putin might do it. So what they are doing is preparing the American public for their false flag later on when our NATO forces actually hit someone with biological warfare weapons and then claim Putin did it.
Exactly.
So the table has been set. They're set for their false flag.
That's a good term, Mike. The table has been set. Yeah, that's exactly right. More than one time. Daryl, what are your thoughts on this Ukraine debacle and the possibility of a false flag?
Right. Yeah, that's a good analogy, Mike. The table has been set and you're what's for dinner. I'm just gonna walk this back into 20th century history and the same propaganda tactics to a T were employed on the English and the Americans in the build up to World War I by propagandists in America by Lippmann and in England by H.G. Wells. Just briefly prior to World War II, the entry of the United States, the same economic strategies and sanctions were placed upon Japan. Exactly. The same devices were implemented. So I see an absolutely consistent modus operandi there. And I think that has to be noted. You know, as Mike keeps saying, they just keep running the power sweep and nobody has memory of it. So.
Yeah, good point. And, you know, it's always amazing to me, you know, how, well, you know, if you use chemical weapons, that's a line in the sand. You know, we can't allow that, but you can drop all the bombs you want. You can blow people up. You can shoot people. That's okay. But if you use chemical weapons, you know, then we're going in. That's the line in the sand. They use the same game. They tried to do it in Syria. It didn't quite work out.
Yeah.
Giuseppe, what are your thoughts?
I think that every Jew-controlled Hollywood movie has the same script trick where they foreshadow every major event earlier in the movie, right? So they'll say something and then they'll say it again and then boom, here it comes. So this is exactly what these Satanists are doing with the false flag operation, because from people there, like I said, I'm on a couple email lists of people who are actually in the Ukraine and tracking this stuff, boots on the ground. And this guy, I was just reading it today. He reiterated, Russia has most of the country locked down. That cruise missile they fired or hypersonic missile was just a show of what they can do because if they're provoked. And so, and the gentleman who's there basically said, look, Russia's gonna control this country by April 30th. So that means that they're gonna do their false flag, chemical or biological release sometime in the next few weeks. Cause otherwise their scam is lost.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I don't know. It looks like either we're gonna have more COVID or a war or both, you know. So I don't know. So just in closing, do you guys see an escalation of this or do you think we're going to see this sort of, you know, put to rest soon? Maybe Mike could go first and then DW.
Well, gentlemen, I'm seeing a lot of, as Daryl said, I'm seeing the power sweep again. And we look at, let's not forget that Robert Kagan, Victoria Nuland's mistress, let's not forget that he was big in the Project for the New American Century. And the Project for the New American Century, which was produced 22 years ago, stated the importance of the United States having the lead in bioweapon technology.
Oh, wow.
And it's right there in their plan, you know, which amazes me. It's still available. You can still see it. They still go with that program. We must be a leader in biological warfare weaponry. And you know, don't make any difference if it's been outlawed or what have you. We'll just build those plants in another country, and we'll see how they work. So, yes, we're seeing, to me, a replay here that has been done so many times. And, you know, I look at these pictures and stuff that are coming in from allegedly what we're seeing in the Ukraine, and I think back to all of the pictures that came from Pearl Harbor, especially among the civilian population at the onset of World War II, that 40 years later, the government admitted that most of those civilians around Pearl Harbor were killed with friendly fire. So we killed with friendly fire, killed people in around Pearl Harbor, and then used their pictures to promote a war against Japan. Look, they killed innocent civilians. They didn't kill them. We did.
Mike, that's shocking. How do you have proof of that?
Yes, it's all very well documented in the book Operation Snow.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Wow. That's amazing. Daryl, what are your thoughts, sir?
Well, you know, just to dovetail or follow on with Mike, you know, the pictures of the German war camps after World War II and the starving people, that was done by the Allied forces by restricting food supplies to everybody, causing a Holodomor inside Germany. And they used the very pictures that they had caused to happen as pictures against German atrocities. So it's these were just wonderful propagandists, if you hadn't noticed, people.
Sorry, DW, but let's not forget the wonderful Republican icon Ronald Reagan claimed for years that at the end of World War II, he was actually in Germany and in Poland and other places and took pictures of these, the Holocaust, and that he was in the military media corps, and that he had actually been there and seen these things himself. But yet his military record shows he never left the United States.
So wow.
Well, he's a great actor.
Amazing. Yeah, he was a great actor. Yes.
Yeah, fantastic. He could even play second hand to a chimp, right?
So, yeah, well, you know, if you stop and think back about the 1980s, you know, at first, the first part of that, we had a clown for president. And after that, we just had an actor.
Yeah, and the audience are the chumps. So, you know, there are some positive outcomes to the situation in, as Joe Biden would say, Urania. Is that what he calls it? Urania. Yeah, bless his heart.
Uranus,
yeah. Yeah. Well, his son might know more about that. Think about the positive outcomes for the Ukrainian people, okay? They won't have to endure many more pompous performances of penis piano playing. the downside for the American pedophile and pederast is all their free child porn is being cut off.
Yeah.
You know, that's the downside, and that just can't be tolerated. So, Ukraine is number one central for child pornography, which is a Jewish sacrament. So, If you have any questions about that, you can go read a book called Merchants of Porn. I think that's the name of it. It lays it all out and who they are. So that's where they have their operations at. So it's, you know, whether you're making biological weapons or child porn or snuff films, you know, you have to have a controlled studio and production facilities.
Right.
So
you gotta have those production values. Just like the, you know, that movie that Zelensky showed the world, the propaganda movie, had very high production values, and it's amazing how he knew how to push the buttons of 9/11, Pearl Harbor, and Martin Luther King Jr. I didn't know better. I would think an American wrote that speech.
I'm glad you don't know better.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, apparently a lot of these people in his cabinet are, you know, Americans with Israeli citizenship and Ukrainian citizenship. So, you know, the whole thing is just a real mess. And but let's just hope that this doesn't escalate via a false flag. It sure seems like they're setting the table for that, as Mike said. So we'll just have to wait and see. But, you know, I don't want to burn up any more time on this, because we're going to delve into a topic that's just going to fly by. The rest of our time is just going to fly by. And this is the subject of essentially the slave trade and who was really behind it. And, Mike, I want to use your term again. I want to let you set the table here, because you've really gone through these books with a fine tooth comb. And why don't you sort of kick it off here and let us know where you want to take the presentation?
Well, thanks, Dave. One of the things that I'm a stickler for, and you guys know me well enough to know this, is source documentation. And I really don't give a healthy damn who produces the source documentation if it can be verified. And I'm no fan of the Nation of Islam. I promise you, neither am I a fan of Louis Farrakhan. But when they produce indisputable documented history, and the source of this is incredible, guys, and if you would just let me read in the first volume of the books we're talking about, The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews, The Jewish Role in Black Slavery, let me read their note on sources. And I think this is incredible what they say here. And I've double checked this. I've gone back. I've looked at their sources and I have found their sources to be spot on. And here is what they said in note on sources. And I quote, "The information contained herein has been compiled primarily from Jewish historical literature. Every effort has been made to present evidence from the most respected of the Jewish authorities and those whose works appear in established historical journals or are published by authoritative Jewish publishing houses. A substantial," this is a critical, listen carefully here, "a substantial body of evidence that supports the findings herein has been excluded by the editors and deemed to be from sources considered anti-Semitic or anti-Jewish." So these people were so critical of providing nothing but source documentation, they themselves threw out anything that could come from a source which had been called anti-Semitic or anti-Jewish. To me, that is an incredible point of view. And so as we look at this, and, you know, you look at the source of their information, the American Jewish Archives from the Hebrew Union College, the American, the American Jewish Historical Quarterly, changed from the publications of the American Jewish Historical Society, and then Herbert Bloom, The Economic Activities of the Jews of Amsterdam in the 17th and 18th Centuries. And then a book by Salo Baron, Arcadius Cahan, and Nachum Gross, Economic History of the Jews, a book published in 75. They also went to the Encyclopedia Judaica, which was Jerusalem, Keter Publishing House in 1971. And they went to Emmanuel HJNA, which was the History of the Jews of the Netherlands Antilles, which is also from the American Jewish Archives in 1973. They went to Karp, Abraham J. Karp, The Jewish Experience in America, Selected Studies from the Publication to the American Jewish Historical Society. And then they went to Jacob Rader Marcus, The Colonial American Jew, 1492 to 1776, three volumes from Wayne State University in Detroit, published in 1970. That's just a few, guys. These people in these books went to the Jewish documents, the Jewish history, and what had been published by many, and many of these are rabbis, which just gives it even more credence to the fact of that the Institute of Slavery, which my ancestors have been blamed for who knows how long, that the institution of slavery was instituted by primarily the people of the Jewish race. Pardon me. Your thoughts?
Well, Mike, that's fascinating, and it's a great starting point. But, of course, you know, when you reference Jewish sources that you're not supposed to know about, that is anti-Semitic.
Oh, damn. I'm sorry, guys. I'll see you later. I'm going home.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, here's the thing that really bothers me. And I have studied for, guys, almost 40 years. And during those times of study, I have noticed particularly the weapons that the people who would hide the truth from you, the weapons that they use. And, you know, of course, there's, you know, the name calling. Let's call people names. Let's do this. Let's do that. But one of the greatest weapons that those who wish to hide the truth from people have used is the simple moniker, it's hate speech. The truth can never be hate speech. It's impossible. It cannot be hate speech. When you hear someone label the truth hate speech, the person that you need to look at is the person who is uttering that statement.
Oh, that's a great point. And, of course, hate speech is in the eye of the beholder, and it's a very slippery slope to start on, because once you go down that road, anything can become hate speech that is of the choosing of those in power. Let's get Daryl's reaction to your opening salvo and then Giuseppe. Daryl, go ahead, sir.
Well, I'm really looking forward to this. My three-volume set showed up here about 2 weeks ago, and I haven't had a time to go through it with a fine-tooth comb. But I will be able to follow along with you, Mike, if you give me book and reference. I find it interesting. You know, the international elf has several qualities. One of them, which is they are amazing at linguistics, and they are, you know, their ability to archive and scribe and document their own history is without reproach. I mean, they go into the finest details. And in this case, as Mike laid out, we're going to use that to make the case. Mike's going to make the case of the by leveraging their chutzpah, their braggadociousness, to hang them with their own petard, with their own words, which is all that the Nation of Islam did, was just a compilation of what the elves had, you know, promulgated, you know, posted, about their own history. So, you know, if that's hate, then, you know, count me in if that's what that is. But you know, if you're a functionally illiterate, you can make words mean whatever you want them to mean, you know, if you're functionally illiterate. And I throw that charge out to the majority of the public of this country, actually. That's right. I'm just calling it out. They're illiterate. So.
Yes. And as you've pointed out many times, Daryl, the definition of words matter. Giuseppe, what are your thoughts? And then we'll let Mike continue with his presentation.
I think both Daryl and Mike made very cogent points, and I would just observe that the whole psyop of hate speech is nothing more than truth the Jew hates to hear or have publicly disseminated.
Good point. Very good point. Okay, Mike, please continue. This is fascinating.
Well, I would recommend to everyone who has any doubts about this, who thinks that maybe we're just on a mission of hate here, I would like for them to make themselves, put themselves in touch with a one particular book. And that book is written by Solomon Grazel, a man of Jewish heritage. And he wrote a book called, and I quote, A History of the Jew. From Babylonian exile to the end of World War II. Now, that book was published by the Jewish Publication Society of America in 1948. So this comes from their own book. Throughout the history of the practice, Jews have been involved in the purchase and sale of human beings. This book is confirmed by our own scholars and historians. Now, the author that I told you, Solomon Grazel, states that, and I quote, Jews were among the most important slave dealers in European society, unquote. Lady Magnus writes that in the Middle Ages, and I quote, the principal purchasers of slaves were found among the Jews. They seemed to be always and everywhere at hand to buy and to have the means equally ready to pay. Henry L. Feingold stated, and I quote, Jews who were frequently found at the heart of commerce could not have failed to contribute a proportionate share to the slave trade directly or indirectly. In 1460, when Jews were the masters of the nautical sciences in Portugal, that nation was importing 700 to 800 slaves annually. The success of these medieval merchants was enhanced by their supreme linguistic abilities. They spoke Arab, Persian, Roman, Frankish, Spanish, and Slavonic, and displayed a business acumen far in advance of the people of their time. I think that's most relevant. The Jews' participation in the slave trade, particularly their trafficking in non-Jewish slaves, incited the moral indignation of Europe's Gentile populations. The Europeans reacted by taxing the Jews, and some were expelled from their host countries for this activity. The expulsion of Jews by European governments was not unusual, which most of the complaints centered around economic exploitation, monopolizing, or what in other phrases was called a sharp practice. By 1500, with the exception of certain parts of Italy, Western Europe had closed its doors to the Jewish people. And there is a listing in DW, if you'll look at it, it's on page 10 of the first book. There is a three-column listing of, and including the dates, of when Jews were expelled from those countries for their various economic practices. Over the next centuries, the centers of Jewish development moved into the Western Hemisphere, where land and commercial opportunities provided the incentives for their immigration. The open and ungoverned territory and the docile and vulnerable indigenous populations were an irresistible attraction to this maligned race. They acquired great wealth in their Caribbean and South American enterprises and eventually moved into the American Northeast, which became the economic focal point for America. It started with the forced expulsion of the Jews from the Spanish Empire and with the early explorer and discoverer of American and the important and early explorer and discoverer of America, Christopher Columbus. So here is that the reference for that statement is a book written by George Cohen, and the title is The Jew in the Making of America, which was published by the Knights of Columbus in Stratford, Connecticut in 1924.
Wow. Well, Mike, what do you think the motivation was? It seems to me that there are at least some, you know, obscure Jewish historians and rabbis that are seeking to present some type of realistic view of what happened. What do you see the motivation of these people that revealed this information, and what do you think the reaction has been to it?
Well, Dave, I think we would be remiss if we didn't address the fact that I believe that the majority of these people were proud of their economic accomplishments. I believe they were very proud of it. Otherwise, they wouldn't have published so many books documenting that themselves.
Well, that's a great point. And it's just interesting how, you know, this kind of information is supposed to be sort of in a certain sphere of you know, sort of Jewish people. The non-Jews aren't really supposed to know this information. And if you stick your nose in it, of course, you're an anti-Semite. So that's very interesting observation, Mike. And I think that's a good explanation. Daryl, why don't you jump in? What's your thoughts on this so far?
Well, you know, they have a history of duplicity, a dualism.
Say it ain't so, Joe.
Yeah, right. So this continuing on with that theme, this tendency towards duplicity, a dualism. They were the inventors of double bookkeeping, and the Venetians brought in double bookkeeping, and of course they keep a double history, and being the consummate liars, much like their father, they keep an accurate set of books, and then they keep the other narrative, the orthodox narrative, for publication. And it's as simple as that. If you, as another book reference, it's a little difficult to get, but it's a good book. It's called The Jews of Caesarea by Kevin Allen Brook, and it goes into this dualistic nature and its documentation, and it's a fully vetted academic book. It's footnoted and detailed. So if you really want to understand their nature and their trade routes and what they were trading, they've always been slavers. They were very proud and effective at slave trading all throughout their period in Caesarea. And one of the other features that they had was that we see present in the Western countries now has been adopted is child sacrifice and bloodletting. So these are consistent. You know, actually, these two topics sort of go together.
Oh, great points. And that goes all the way back to the Canaanites. The blood sacrifice and child sacrifice. So, and you know, the concept of two sets of books, Daryl, that's a great point and very significant. I'm just glad the American government doesn't do, two sets of books. That's, good to know. Giuseppe, what are your observations, sir?
Well, my observations are, you look at this image, the DeWolf family, the largest trading family, slave trading family in, U.S. history, and look at those chicken swinging beaks on those Jews. I mean, and those people controlled most of the slave trading in the United States. And I just don't understand. I guess I do. Chocolate. It's just so unbelievable that if the average normie would wake up to the truth, like St. Patrick in the allegory drove the snakes out of Ireland, we could drive the Jews out of the first world. I mean, that's the only way that any of this is going to really be solved.
Well, Giuseppe?
Yes.
Giuseppe? You really hit upon something there, and I'm not sure you're aware that what you just hit upon. When St. Patrick drove the snakes out of Ireland, there were no snakes there. That was That was an analogy, a parable for the Jews. They drove the Jews out.
Right. An allegory. Yep. I'm aware of it.
Allegory. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's the snakes they were driving out.
Yep. Exactly. Right.
Yeah. Great point.
Yeah.
Great point. Well, Mike, why don't you continue with your presentation? This is fascinating, and I'm loving that you're just hitting upon the actual primary source documentation right off the bat. That's important.
Well, let's look at one source here. Let me see exactly which one this one is. And oh, this was written by a gentleman named Wisnitzer, and the title of his book was Jews in Colonial Brazil.
Hmm.
Okay, let's read a little something from there. It says, the West India Company, which monopolized imports of slaves from Africa, sold slaves at public auctions against cash payments. It just so happened that cash was mostly in the hands of Jews. The buyers who appeared at the auctions were almost always Jews, and because of this lack of competitors, they could buy slaves at very low prices. On the other hand, there was also no competition in the selling of the slaves to the plantation owners and other buyers, and most of them purchased on credit, payable at the next harvest in sugar. Profits up to 300% of the purchase value were often realized with extremely high interest rates. If it happened that the date of such an auction fell on a Jewish holiday, the auction was always postponed. This, of course, happened first on Friday, October the 21st, 1644. So, again, we have the documentation by the people themselves who were masters of the slave trade. And yet, guys, again, it eats my soul up that my ancestors are blamed for this. And I promise you, my ancestors weren't Jewish. They were Scottish or Irish. So that is indeed, you know, and so we have perverted history today. We're tearing down monuments to the people because they were racist. But why haven't we torn down the monuments to Chaim Soloman in Chicago? He was very much involved in the slave trade. Not only that, but he was the liaison in our American history between the French and the United States during the Revolutionary War. Also, let's go back to the fact that the Quakers petitioned by letter sent by Tench Cox and given to Benjamin Franklin, a letter begging the convention to outlaw slavery in their new convention. And yet, it was never read. It was never presented. But the letter from the Philadelphia synagogue was presented and read. Does anyone see a preference here? DW?
Yeah, I do. These are some fascinating points. As the source documents will provide, that the Sephardic Jews who had every appearance of being white, chameleons, could stand next to a colonial, and the casual observer wouldn't know any difference. And this ability to masquerade or visually conceal their identity has allowed them to project on to history that this was a white English, Anglo-Saxon, Irish, colonial, quality of slaving. And in some regards, some of those people had a participation in it, but it was a market. The owners of that market, as history proves, and, these books demonstrate the monopoly of that initiation of that slave trade, the ones that owned the ships, the ones that insured the ships, the one that captained the ships, the ports of entry where the slaves were brought, these were Jewish controlled. Sephardic Jews, and they had a monopoly, and they could, with a monopoly and with cash, as Mike pointed out, what you have is the ability to establish prices and control that market of supply and demand. And of course, if you're trying to get high prices in a, this is free trade. This is a free market. Okay. They're actually doing capitalism. I know this sounds weird to people, but you kind of need to get your head around it. These are just commodities. And as a purveyor or provider of that commodity, they want the highest price. And think of it in this way, if this helps, is that the Jews controlled the monopoly on the slave trade. They didn't own the cotton, they weren't out there with the whips in the cotton fields or whatever you want to call it. But they had a monopoly on the slave trade, like the Jews had a monopoly on the South African diamond mines. And that's how they approach it, by creating monopoly.
And Daryl, you said Sephardic. Didn't you mean Ashkenazi Jews that are able to sort of chameleon into, you know, being white, so-called white?
Not really.
Oh, no.
Sephardic. A Sephardic Jew is of Spanish origin.
Okay.
And they have they don't have that Eastern Turkish Khazarian double hook nose eagle, squinty eyed appearance. Alexander Hamilton was Sephardic.
So. Right. Okay. Good point. Okay. Thanks for the clarification. And Mike, you know, what do you think the numbers were here in terms of, you know, slaves at the peak of all of this in America? Do you have an idea what the numbers look like in terms of, you know, black slaves in America?
Well, we know that at the advent of the so-called, what I call our second war of independence, at that time in 1861, we know that there were over 400,000 blacks in the South. Now, we have to understand many of them had been born there, but certainly not the great majority. So that had been occurring for quite some time. So the numbers would be hard to, you know, I've read, going back in the book, trying to remember exactly where it was, it talked about, you know, that the price of the African had to be made higher once they reached the ports in Rhode Island and New York and Boston. They had to be made higher because of the numbers they lost crossing the ocean because of the very poor conditions they were kept in.
Right.
So, but as actual numbers, Dave, I don't have that at hand, but I will be searching for that as we continue.
Okay. Yeah. And, you know, I think it's clear too that, you know, nobody of good conscience could really support slave trade. It's really an abominable institution. Before you continue, let's get Giuseppe's observations. Giuseppe, go ahead, sir.
Well, I just put up on the screen, private sales, of black humans by Jacob Cohen and Son. That was in, May of 18, or that one's December 16th. Negroes at Auction by Oy Vey, J. Ellen T. Levin. 22 likely Negroes. I mean, the soulless satanic Jew is responsible for all of the evil on this planet, or a vast majority. There's other evil, but I mean, much like we see the hierarchical pyramidal structure, they are at the top in so many things. And it's just offensive to me, and you know, the farcical Jew pseudoscience of psychiatry, they've even described what they do, what Mike is talking about in his anger at being blamed for what these Jews have done with controlling the slave trade. It's called transference and projection. And they transfer the blame to someone else for what they do, and they project onto others what they are currently actually doing and have done. So it's just, What a bunch of subhuman deviants is all I can say.
Oh. Well, Giuseppe.
Yes.
They have a logic for why they do that because they have no conscience and they have no ability to repent. And so to become, not to be overwhelmed by their filth, they have to project it onto a scapegoat, which just happens to look like you and Dave.
That's right. Well,
and I think that's where the swing of the chickens comes in too. All that is transferred into the chicken through magic. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, Mike, please continue.
Well, guys, I'm looking at quite a few different things here. And Giuseppe, I just sent you a picture of volume 4 in this series. And volume 4 is nothing but a complete book of documented sales, just like you listed before.
Okay, let me put that up, Mike.
Okay, and it says valuable family of field Negroes for sale. Jews selling black slave sale advertising by American Jews. The whole book is full of these. There is nothing but advertisements by Jews for the sale of blacks, and most of it in colonial America and up through 1860. And there are all kinds of information in that. I would highly recommend that book, Giuseppe, to any who would like it. And thanks for putting up the picture of it. It's very good.
Happy to, wow, to be producer.
Well, interesting. And, you know, sort of a modern day reverberation of this might be the allegations of, you know, the great Israeli involvement in organ harvesting and organ trading.
Yep.
That's sort of just, you know, piecemealing out people instead of an entire person. DW, what are your thoughts?
Well, I have that. Excuse me, I got a frog in my throat. I have that book in my hands here, Auction Sales. Jews selling blacks, and if you want the straightest and most direct information about their participation, and you don't have the $90 or $80 to spend on the other ones, buy this one because it'll plug you right into the language, and it gives all the lists of names and content. It lists the slavery services and the Jewish lawmakers that were involved in proliferating it, and also the names of the Jewish slave catchers. So this is a great and a very affordable original documentation, source documentation of that. I can only imagine that if Neiman Marcus had been in business, and they would have had their own auction floor, wouldn't they? So, So, I recommend that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Giuseppe, why don't you jump in and take us where you want to go here for a few minutes?
Well, what I'm curious about is to get all three of your gentlemen's thoughts on how is it that seemingly bright, good-hearted people can be so deceived by the minions of Satan into feeling sorry for these murderous, child-raping parasites. And, oh, the Holocaust, oh, you're an anti-Semite, oh, you're a hater. How can people who seem to be somewhat rational be entranced that way? Start with Mike.
Good question.
Oh, wow. Guys, would you repeat that, please, Giuseppe? I was occupied. I was receiving instructions from my better half.
Sure. My question was that how is it that many of the people we know seem rational, seem good-hearted, yet they're so entranced by the minion of Satan, who is in actuality slave trading, murder, child rapist, organ harvesters. I mean, just drug dealers, you know, murdering people with fentanyl, everything. It's all the Jew. But yet, oh, you're an anti-Semite, you're a hater. Oh, we don't hate here. We welcome everyone. Why do you welcome such a soulless, evil child of Satan and act like they deserve a seat at the table when they have, like the cancer they are, now control the table? So why is it that people can't see that, Mike, the average person?
Well, I would attribute that to the 10th plank of the Communist Manifesto, Double G.
Which is?
And that is that public schools paid for by the taxpayer and administered by the government.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Our public school system, for the better part of 100 years now, has been controlled by the people from nonprofit organizations, and it is done with your tax money. When you send your children to a public school in the United States, you are sending them to be indoctrinated. And guys, one of the things I'll never forget, this happened quite some time back. I had a very good friend back in Arizona, and his kids and our kids kind of grew up together. And it was, you know, we became almost like extended family to each other. So, but the one thing I remember was my good friend, the father of the other family, he came to me and he said, I'm terribly concerned because, he said, my son is doing so bad at Arizona State University. He is just not doing well and he's not getting good grades and everything else. And he said, would you care to talk to him for me and just find out? Because he said, I don't seem to be able to get anywhere with him. And, you know, talk to him and see what he says. Well, I gave this gentleman a call on the phone, young man, and he was still at Arizona State. Now, you got to remember, guys, this was in the late 90s. And I said, okay, what's going on? Why are you having such problems? And he said, well, he said, the thing I've got to tell you, he said, this is so hard for me because I'm here at a college where every one of my professors tells me on a day-to-day basis that everything I have been taught by my mother and father is wrong and that I should repudiate my own upbringing and accept their teachings. Well, guys, that, you know, and I called his, and, you know, and he also said, you know, he said, the thing that's killing me is my parents are paying big dollars for this.
Wow.
So to me, that was the encapsulated, and I say this to a lot of people, and I can tell you from my own personal experience, I have a daughter who has been completely changed in the American education system. She is now somewhere to the far left of Hillary Clinton.
Oh, my God.
And she didn't leave home that way, guys, I'll promise you. So the American education system is destroying us.
All by design, too.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can't help but notice, too, when I drive around, you know, San Diego and sometimes Los Angeles, many schools really look like prisons. You know, there's one school I keep thinking about where they actually have, you know, it's sort of a decoration on the windows, but it looks like bars across all of the windows. And then a lot of the schools have giant chain link fences around them. And so, you know, you're sending children into sort of a prison-like, you know, soul-sucking environment. I mean, and that's aside from all the garbage that's being, you know, shoveled into their minds through cultural Marxism and just essentially turning them into a machine of self-hatred, which is very sad. Daryl, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, that's a big topic. I thought Mike did a excellent summation of it. Giuseppe, I would say, I say that's a convergence of cowardice and hypocrisy over a cultural revolution. You know, Orthodox history is simply Bolshevik bullshit.
Yeah.
And the history for the 20th century was written, it's bullshitism. You know, you know, the history and culture of America in the 20th century has been defined by interpretation of liberal communist Jews and their capitalistic financiers. Interesting. Liberal communist Jews working with capitalist financiers. Seems that's interesting, isn't it? You know, Wall Street protected, financed them. The legislation, your U.S. legislators protected them by Congress. Congress has been assimilated into an agenda before their duplicitous legislation was needed by the Zio communist banker class. So they're bought and paid for. It's full spectrum dominance for the fourth and fifth generation warfare started in the early 1900s, realistically, you know. And I don't know what goes in the minds of these people, because I don't have the same kind of thinking. But a coward allows the destructions of hundreds of millions at the hands of merely thousands. I don't know. I think you find the answer on an individual basis as to why most people are cowards and conform to the orthodoxy of hypocrisy. That's when you know your nation has failed.
Boy, that's true. And you made a great point about 20th century history. And, you know, just looking into World War II, and once you realize, you know, it's hard to believe that America actually fought on the side of communism. That's an obvious fact, but it's rarely brought up. And you looked at how America did all they could to kickstart America's involvement in the war, which was highly unpopular. And then I really want to go deeper into World War I too, because World War I's even more bizarre in terms of why America would have even gotten involved.
Dave,
and so, go ahead.
I was going to say there's a great summation by, I don't promote this enough, we have a chat that is true free speech. You and I, our cooperation, we call it Rising Tide Media. Rising Tide lifts all boats. And Equicentric, it's at risingtide.chatango.com. Equicentric says, Giuseppe's point confirms the power of indoctrination, perception management, and spell casting. That's really a good summation.
We'll be right back after this message.
Ladies and gentlemen, your lives are becoming more difficult as the life force of your world is draining away. Have you noticed that as everything around you seems to decline, one thing still grows? It is the power of your rulers. None of their plans and directives have solved your problems or made your life better. The only result has been their increased control over you at the cost of your freedom. Do you know why? You gave them the power. They called for your sacrifice, and you thought it was noble. They said if you worked for yourself and your family, that you were selfish and uncaring, and they made you feel ashamed. They denounced the leaders of industry as greedy exploiters. You agreed. All evil needs to win is the consent of good people. To everyone within the range of my voice, you now have a choice to make. If you decide to support the notion of sacrifice enforced by the state, your game is up. Your world is in a downward spiral, and you will ride it down to destruction. But if you share the values, if you believe that your life is a sacred possession for you to make the most of, if you want to live by the judgment of your own mind, not edicts from the state, then follow our lead. Do not support your own oppressors. Stop letting the system exploit you. Form your own communities on the frontiers of your crumbling world. Your rulers hold you by your endurance to carry the burdens they impose, by your generosity when you hear cries of despair, and above all,
by your innocence which cannot grasp the depths of their evil. The world you are living in is the world they wanted. Leave them to it. Those who are eager to build a better world, a world of freedom and opportunity, a world based on mutual respect, in that world you will not receive alms, nor pity, nor forgiveness of sins, but honor, respect, and justice. Don't let the fire go out spark by irreplaceable spark in confusion and despair. The world you desire can be won. It exists. It is real. It is possible. It is yours.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the Internet. It's your world. Take it.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the Internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution, Revolution. Radio! Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps. The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Okay, welcome back to the third and final hour of Operation Scorpio. And it has been my great honor to be talking with both DW, Daryl Wayne, and the rebel madman himself, Mr. Mike Gatti, about a very important topic, a very controversial topic, which is the origins and the ownership of the slave trade. And in America. And so Mike has really been bringing to the table some very well-documented information from the Nation of Islam, who actually dug up this information from a lot of Jewish historians. So this is just a fascinating and a very deep rabbit hole, because there's so many corollary places to go from this in terms of where we are now. So, Mike, why don't you continue with your presentation and just kick things off for this hour for us, please.
All right. Thanks, Dave. pardon me. The Jews arrived in North America primarily as refugees from Brazil and from the islands of the Caribbean, and met a population much different from their own. The American colonies represented a land of farmers and seaport merchants. And as late as the mid-18th century, 9/10 of the inhabitants made their living from the soil. As many as 1/3 to 1/2 of the entire Revolutionary era population came from the class of indentured servants, a class whose members were primarily the purged criminals of European jails. The Jews, on the other hand, were of the mercantile class, with an entrepreneurial tradition and a worldwide network of commercial relationships. The majority of these Jews were by no means poor and destitute, the huddled masses as listed on the Statue of Liberty. but instead were highly skilled and savvy businessmen whose wealth on arrival far surpassed that of many of the other immigrants, as almost all of the early Jewish settlers in America belonged to the wealthy class, wrote historian Peter Wiernick, himself a Jew. And he also said, and I quote, it was natural for them to accept the institution of slavery as they found it, and then to derive as much benefit from it as other affluent men of their time, unquote. The earliest Jewish settlements were established in Newport, Rhode Island, and New York City, where there were numerous Jewish slaveholders long before and right through the American Revolution. Jews adapted to the business climate of colonial North America and operated with the same skill they had demonstrated in the island regions to the south, and accepted black slavery without question as to its morality. In the North before 1800 and in the South all through the colonial period, slaves were stocked as commodities by Jewish merchants. Now that, folks, is documented by the Jewish historian Leon Huner in a book called The Jews of Virginia from the Earliest Times to the Close of the 18th Century, a book which was published in 1911. Might be a little hard to find that one. But Africans were brought to the colonies as slaves by Jewish merchant shippers, and in the South, Jews began to enter the planter class in substantial numbers because of their wealth. The New York and Newport area Jews had established a highly efficient transatlantic shipping operation. Jews who settled in North Africa with access to the African mainland arranged with African tribal traders for the transport of blacks to the Atlantic coast for sale to the New World merchant shippers. Liquor, feverishly distilled in the American Northeast, was used in Africa in much the same way as it was in the destruction of the American Indian civilization. The New England colonies became so dependent on the alcohol for slave trade that in its absence, they claimed, would have idled two-thirds of all of their ships and caused massive unemployment, crippling their economy. Maybe we understand now why they wanted slavery included in the Constitution. The colony's very lifeblood was slavery and the slave trade. Jewish historian Henry L. Feingold, in a fit of understatement, put it this way, and I quote, the traffic in human beings by the Portuguese, Dutch, French, and English was an essential ingredient of the early capital formation necessary for the development of the capitalist system. And Jews who were frequently found at the heart of commerce could not have failed to contribute to the slave trade directly or indirectly. It should be made very plain at this point that even until the Civil War era, Jews as a community never interfered with the practice of slavery or registered any complaints or reservations about its dehumanizing effects on the black man and woman, for that matter. When some colonies have proposed high tariffs on the importation of slaves, intending to discourage the slave trade, Jewish merchants, Joseph Marx, Samson Levy, and David Franks protested, for they were among those who wished to see the traffic continue. Slavery was a business concern mitigated only by the bottom line. Regionally, one can discern no difference in the Jews' attitude or philosophy with regard to non-Jewish human bondage, says Bertram W. Korn, himself a Jew, and I quote, it would seem to be realistic to conclude that any Jew who could afford to own slaves and had need for their services would inevitably do so. The eminent Dr. Marcus confirms this in his book, The United States Jewry, 1776 to 1985, in which he said, all through the 18th century into the early 19th, Jews in the North were to own black servants. In the South, the few plantations owned by Jews were filled with slave labor. In 1820, over 75% of all Jewish families in Charleston, Richmond, and Savannah owned slaves, employed as domestic servants. Almost 40% of all Jewish householders in the United States owned at least one slave. There were no protests against slavery as such by Jews in the South ever, for they were always outnumbered at least 100-1. But very few Jews anywhere in the United States protested against chattel slavery on moral grounds, unquote. Thoughts, gentlemen?
Well, Daryl, why don't you pick this up? What are your reactions to this? This is just shocking, actually, to me.
Stunning level of hypocrisy, no doubt.
Well, yeah. That's a powerful presentation there, Mike. Where do I go with that? Well, it's like this. There's several aspects to the slave trade and the commodity of slavery, and what was valuable about the slave? His ability or her ability to produce and work, endure the hot temperatures. But the next step above, integrated with that, is that the slave, whether it had been the Scots-Irish or the Africans from the Gold Coast, was obedience and conformity. They had to conform and they had to be obedient, which is another aspect to what slavery is. And the slave couldn't say no. That's when you know you're a slave, is when you can't say no to this authority. All we're trying to do here, as I see it, Mike and guys, is just to define, cui bono, who benefited and who were the masters. And the masters are the same ones now, is that they control the finances and they have the capital, the means, method, and opportunity to execute their overall plan of profit and to extend self-interest. And I like what the man says in his book, Mike, in his reference, that these are just merely commodities traded on the open market. I think that really puts it in context. That's my thoughts on it.
Yeah, that's a good point. And it's just, it's terrible to think of any human being as a commodity to be traded, without the ability to say no. And it really is sort of a form of psychological warfare, all of this concept of slavery. And of course, the first slaves that came to America were the Irish primarily. And, that's something to keep in mind as well. Giuseppe, what are your thoughts, sir?
We all, in college got that, freshman class that discussed man's inhumanity to man, and it's been going on a long time, pretty much 6,000 years since the return of humanity from the antediluvian flood. And it's really, really sad that the forces of evil literally have in their religion that real humans such as us are considered goyim cattle, and we can all be enslaved, and as is the case with the billions of saps who took the bubonic Jew jab and are now going to pay a heavy toll for that price. And it's just, it never ends. I mean, until Larry and Mary, the normies, wake up and start to, instead of seeing, oh, that's hate speech, until at some point they can become actual mature, rational adults and look at actions forensically, look at facts and truths provable, and stop being, oh, chocolate, Holocaust. It's just so, so pathetic.
Well, I think you're bringing up the bubonic Jew jab. That's a good term. That sort of goes along with what Daryl is saying, because, they're trying to make it so that you could not say no to this thing.
Right.
You can't participate in society.
Yep.
If you don't take this experimental medical, protocol.
Right.
Inject it into your arm. So that's a modern day extension of, you know, not being able to say no. Just really quite incredible.
Indeed.
Yeah. Well, Mike, what are your thoughts or observations on this? And also, you know, please continue the next stage of your presentation.
Well, guys, the one thing I would like to do at this point is to jump forward from the traders of Jews and, you know, the commodity market. Let's jump forward and look at how, by whatever means, and I believe that the synagogue of Philadelphia was directly involved in instituting slavery into the Constitution in 1787. Giuseppe, I know you read my lessons on a daily basis or a semi-daily basis on the Constitutional Convention and the various ratification conventions. And the point of it was is they brought up slavery at the Constitutional Convention, but they would never call it that. And so it was always called, they had another name for it, but they never used slavery. It was never mentioned in the Constitution, but the institution was guaranteed for 20 years.
Jeez.
And so that was the initial part of the Constitution. So I said recently on social media that the Constitution embraced slavery, and someone says, well, it had slavery, but it didn't embrace it. Will somebody tell me the damn difference? I have a little bit of a problem there. If you put it in there, you have embraced it theoretically and, you know, emphatically. Pardon me. So slavery was set to end 20 years later. Well, that was in 1811. And who was president in 1811? James Madison. And James Madison is the father of the Constitution. And yet when slavery should have been stopped and when James Madison had the power to stop slavery just by saying, okay, it's over in 1811, he didn't do that. So then we continue on down the road to 1857 and the United States, first day with my new lips, the United States Supreme Court decides they will become involved in the Dred Scott decision. Now, anyone who has looked at this Dred Scott decision can find that there's something very, very wrong about this. Because Missouri, a slave state, said that because Dred Scott's owners had carried he and his family into a non-slaveholding state, which was Wisconsin, that they were therefore free. The slave state of Missouri's Supreme Court backed that up and declared Dred Scott to be free, he and his family. And so here we have those terrible southern states, those terrible slaveholding states, their Supreme Court said, okay, Dred Scott, you're free. It took 11 years of manipulation through the U.S. court system. Now, here's my point. Where did Dred Scott get the money to have 11 years of litigation all the way to the Supreme Court? So it goes all the way to the Supreme Court in 1857, and the U.S. Supreme Court says, no, blacks are not citizens, and therefore they are still slaves. That's the U.S. Supreme Court, people, a court to which there is no earthly appeal. So the Supreme Court says 1857, yes, slavery is constitutional. So then, you know, 3 years later, we have seven southern states secede from the United States for economic reasons. They're being taxed to death. And so they said, okay, we're seceding. And they mentioned slavery in their secession documents, of which they are now crucified, especially Alexander Hamilton Stephens, the vice president of the Confederacy, for his cornerstone speech. And so now they are just absolutely destroyed because of that. But everything they were saying was constitutional in 1860 and 1861. So the South was standing on the Constitution, which the United States government had given them and told them slavery is constitutional. But yet we still go down the road and the South gets blamed. Oh, you went to war to protect slavery. It was constitutional, asshole.
Well, and if you ever read any of Lincoln's writings, he was not exactly, you know, sort of full of love for black people, to say the least. And but, Mike, I want to just briefly jump back to 1811. You said slavery was planned to end. So Madison must have done something to prevent that. I mean, what happened and what was his reasons for continuing such an abominable institution?
He just didn't mention it. They just let it slide because it was in effect. They knew that at that time, with the war of against Britain coming on, they could not cripple their economy. And the economy at that time was based very heavily in the South. And so, okay, we just won't mention it. Dave, you know, if we want to just throw in, I don't want to jump ship here, but let's throw in the fact that on September the 12th of 2001, George W. Bush put into, by executive order and by National Defense Authorization Act, put in the continuity in government phase, which said that the government supersedes the Constitution in all actions in a time.
Going to the term of slavery in the Constitution, they use doublespeak. That's doublespeak was around a long time before George Orwell came into this world. He just did a brilliant job of identifying it. And in the run up to the case of the Cultural Revolution that was being promoted for 11 years prior to the Civil War, the War of Northern Aggression, they needed a cause, and that cause, to set off that explosion, they needed a bomb in the minds of people. And the Dred Scott case is the initiator for that explosion. So in I'll give you just a little background here. To create a explosion, you need a power source, you need an initiator, and you need an explosive. And Dred Scott is the initiator culturally for that explosion to occur. So that's my point of view on it.
Oh, interesting. Yes. And you know, this concept of doublespeak or newspeak, you know, it sort of goes back to the Henry Kissinger quote that I brought out at the beginning of the show, which is that truth does not matter, perception does. And that seems to be the modus operandi of how, you know, people in power operate, essentially. Giuseppe, what are your thoughts on this? There's a lot to kind of unravel here.
Oh, yeah. I mean, both Mike and Daryl continue to just deliver mind-blowing actual facts, forensically provable facts, and it's the level of hypocrisy to go from leading the slave trade in the United States, being the primary majority of slave ownership in the United States, to then propping up and creating the Jew, created the NAACP, the Anti-Defamation League, the Southern Poverty Law Center, all these traitorous Jew organizations, and to manage to convince normies that white Southerners who had very little to do with the slave trade were the villains and should be systematically you know, the Southern culture is being destroyed. It's so sad and offensive. And the great Frederick C. Blackburn documents this weekly on his exceptional show, Blackbird Nine's Breakfast Club, live Wednesdays, available in the archive. It's one of my must-listen-to shows every week. And what's going on now with the portly Jewish lesbians who are invading Boone, North Carolina, and everywhere else, and it's just unbelievable, the chutzpah of these soulless Satanists. It's just unbelievable to me.
Well, yeah, that's a good point about the culture being destroyed. And I don't know, let's just toss this out for everybody. Maybe Mike could take it first. How do we stop this process of sort of the destruction of culture from within and sort of reclaim some type of moral society? Mike, what's the magic bean there, Mike?
Well, guys, in my opinion, there is none. We've gone too far to turn back now.
Yeah.
There to try to educate enough people in this country, because they don't want to be educated. They fight you tooth and nail to keep you from providing them the truth, you know, which they either don't listen to your truth, or they call it hate speech or something else. No, as long as people fight against the truth, it's just not going to happen. But I look back many times. I do not think there is anything we can do except to continue to try to educate people so that people somewhere will have this knowledge if it's built back. And I don't mean built back better. I mean built back like it should have been. There has to be this knowledge where it can be disseminated. And that is what I take upon almost daily as my goal, is to try to put this information out there. I don't put my opinion out there. I try to put documented evidence out there. But, guys, we can't fix this. I still put a lot of confidence in that speech that Patrick Henry gave. And he said that, you know, the Supreme Being, that if we are righteous, will bring things to our side in such a battle. And I can tell you right now, that's not going to happen in the American Christian Church, because they're too busy flying the flag of the Ukraine. And at least two ministers I called and asked them why they didn't fly the flag of Christianity. They didn't know there was a flag of Christianity. So that ought to give us some kind of idea. Gentlemen, I hate to be a negative. I'm not trying to be negative. I'm trying to be a realist, and I don't see a peaceful way out of this mess.
Unfortunately, I have to agree there. I just think we crossed the Rubicon some time ago, and now we're entering into endgame, it seems like to me. Daryl, what are your thoughts? And then Giuseppe. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, well, you know, what the I'm very much in line, no surprise, with Mark's perspectives. You know, what the seed of the serpent meant for evil, God can use for good. And so when you look at the turn that into a contraction, it's SOS, you know, seed of the serpent, synagogue of Satan. You know, interesting parallel there. But I would go to, you know, I'm sort of a pragmatist, and I want to quote the great cultural leader of the 60s and 70s, Janis Joplin. And how do you drag Janis Joplin into this conversation? And to answer your question, which is a great question, you know, it's one of the big ones. How do you get there? And to quote Janis and her song, "Freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose." And what we're watching is this decline, this spiral of degeneracy as people lose more and more and more. And obviously, they haven't lost enough yet. We're going to have to be witness to the complete deprecation over the cliff, to where they have nothing left to lose. And then they will scream, freedom, freedom, liberty, liberty, and expect guys like us to do something. when we've been trying to do it all along. Without charge, at great expense. And of course that's our job that we've accepted. But, just real briefly here, cause we're kind of winding down, but I just want to read you something in a period that's, appropriate. It's period appropriate. It's from Theodore and Franklin Delano Roosevelt's cousin, Clinton Roosevelt, and his attitudes on government. He says, in outward form, the House of Assembly are copied from the House of Commons, and the Senate's from the House of Lords. The first are elected for the shorter terms, the last for longer. The president is in the place of the sovereign. But the outward forms of government are not of much importance. They are used as masqueraders, use their dresses to disguise their persons. There is a power behind the throne and greater than the throne, which says to the king and parliament, the president, you shall or shall not go to war. You shall sustain the laws and constitution, or you shall suspend them both at our option, which taxes it as it pleases and without responsibility to any but stockholders, corporations. The reader can too easily divine the nature of this power, for it is now grinding America as well as England into the dust. It is the banking system, and its leader in this country has acknowledged that by it alone, he has and his class had the power to make men willing to make sacrifices. It is done simply by lending and withdrawing at certain times and places. Now, this is written, what I just read, okay? This is what makes this important. This was written in 1841.
Wow.
1841. Could it have been on a podcast or an interview yesterday? Hello? 1841. Okay, this is what we're up against, and you know, this is the to give you a picture, this is the field mouse standing in the middle of the field as the hawk descends upon him with talons bared and claws, and the little mouse just stands there with his middle finger up. And that's basically what we're doing. Okay. This is an act of defiance. Okay, so when I see so-called Americans being defiant, I'll give them a wink and a nod. Okay, but resistance is futile. Defiance is imperative. That's my point of view.
Wow, great point, Giuseppe. Go ahead, sir.
That is a great point, and I would only add that, you know, we are all deeply men of spiritual pursuit and men of faith, and I will always have faith in the divine, in God, and you know, I have nothing but absolute disdain and disgust for Satan and his minions, and I will, you know, we are the little field mouse given, we're blasting with both of them, and we'll continue to do so, but I still hope in my heart that the great entranced, intentionally immature, psychologically, spiritually, emotionally vain, vacuous, normies can receive enlightenment and wake up, at which point everything, the synagogue of Satan and all the other parasites that prey upon children, rape them, kill them, and all the evil of the world could be wiped out in 3 months if people would just wake up and see what is really going on the way we do. And it's, you know, until I die, I will hold that as a hope, while I will continue to blast the synagogue of Satan every moment of my life.
Yeah, that's heavy words. I agree. Mike, we're coming down to the final 20 minutes, so is there anything that you want to make sure to squeeze in there before we hit the wall?
Well, guys, I think, you know, we've pretty well covered it. For those of you who doubt the authenticity of the documentation we've presented, I suggest you buy the books as I did over a year ago and go through them and verify the sources. You know, that is something most people don't do. And Americans today believe that if they turn on the evening news, they're getting the straight skinny from CNN and from Fox News. And whatever they're saying must be gospel or they wouldn't be allowed to say it on TV, right? But they tend to forget our good friend William Casey of the CIA in 1982, who said, "We will know our disinformation program is complete when everything the American public believes is false." People, if you want to know the truth, turn off the damn lobotomy box. It's not to be found there. And if that is the source of your opinion, if that is the source of your knowledge, you are an intellectual moron. I don't know much else to say there. DW, go ahead.
Well, let's. I appreciate that, Mike. let's put this in a bit of a contemporary context here. And I'm going to name names and point my finger. And I know which, and you know which one I'm pointing with. take Sean Scam Hannity, for example. Simply and clearly just a paid shill professional propagandist. That's all he is. He's a seven-figure propagandist. That's all he does. He's serving the purpose of Uncle Walter Cronkite. Did for all those years for the same people. That's all he is. If you take his information in and internalize it, you're doomed. Tucker Carlson, what is he doing? Well, he is simply playing the other side of this theater. And his job is to be the TV image of Howard Beale in Network. I'm mad as hell, and I ain't going to take it anymore.
That's exactly
That's
right.
his job. He's Howard Beale, okay? And if you haven't seen the movie, my little analogy didn't make a lot of sense to you. But if you have seen the movie, that's the part he's playing. Of course, this is perception management in order to manufacture consent. It's part of, you know, what Mike knows very well is the PSYOP. This is PSYOP.
Well,
so, Darryl, yeah.
Buddy, you nailed it. I'm sorry to step on you there, buddy, but you nailed it, and that was what I was thinking of when we contrast people like Sean Hannity and Tucker Carlson. In creating a PSYOP, and I've been involved in a few of those, in creating a PSYOP, there must be a grain of truth. You cannot sell a PSYOP that is 100% lies. And if you don't give a certain group of people a place to anchor their ship, because if they anchor their ship with Tucker Carlson, then they go, oh, well, then they begin to listen to the other stuff on Fox News, the Hannitys and the, you know, the child molester, what was his name, the rest of them, or the female molester. But they do that. They put them on there. They give them fantastic amounts of money. Guys, in whose world was Rush Limbaugh worth $1 million a week?
The Zionist.
That's what he got. He got $1 million a week from the Bain Corporation, which gave him his first $1 million a week contract, or almost $1 million a week, $50 million a year. The first contract he got was from the Bain Corporation, which was owned by whom? Mitt Romney. They pay these people. You nailed it, DW. They pay these people like Sean Hannity. They pay them a fantastic amount of money to get up and sit in front of the people and lie their ass off.
Yep.
That's what they get paid for. I'm sorry for jumping on you there, buddy, but you hit the PSYOP right on the button. Most people think that a PSYOP has to be 100% false. If it's 100% false, it always fails.
Oh no, they don't see. There's always three parts to the dialectic, and the third part that you never see is the Tucker Carlson. You don't see him as part of the dialectic. You only see the Sean Hannity and the Rush Limbaugh versus MSNBC. Okay, you don't see the other one, and so that sucks you in, and like you said, it anchors it. So all we're doing here, and I've learned a lot of this, you know, from Mike, is, and you know, the thinking that he's provoked in me. I've known Mike. How many letters have we known each other? 7 years now, maybe going on 8. I don't know.
Whatever it is, it's been too damn long.
I'm surprised I haven't had an aneurysm yet, because he's always you know, making me think about these things, you know. And the beauty of a psyop is when you can see one side of it. You can see one side of it. You're supposed to think and operate and identify in a two-dimensional world, black or white, and you don't see that other hidden hand that's got you anchored into it. And so all you can see is Democrat bad, Democrat, socialist Democrat bad. That's all you can say. That's the only thing that you can repeat. And the other side is trapped in the other side of it. And that's just a circle. Okay, that's all it is. Symbolically, it just goes in a revolution. It's a circle. That's all it does. It can never get off the circle. And we only have, you know, several hundred years of proof of that, which is what Mike tries to bring out all the time. And that's sorcery. That's magic. Okay, that's magic. So if words can affect thoughts, then thoughts can affect your words, and they're the word sorcerers, and they're really good at it. So you have to break the spell, and which is what we're trying to do. So,
oh, great, what great are you guys? Point. Really, really great points, DW. And you know, I'm amazed too when I just talk to people when I'm out and about, and you bring up the Ukraine thing. I'll hear people almost, you know, give the talking points verbatim from the mainstream media news, and they actually believe it's their own thoughts. That's the part that I find really interesting. Same with Operation Coronavirus, same thing. People just parrot what they hear on television, and they truly believe it's their own thoughts, and that's when the PSYOP has really reached maximum efficiency, I guess you could say. Giuseppe, what are your thoughts?
Oh, man, the three of you have just hit three consecutive home runs now that the greedy billionaires and the greedy baseball-playing millionaires came to a deal. And, oh, thank God we'll have Major League Baseball. But, yeah, I mean, essentially the divide-and-conquer strategy is honed to perfection, laser-like focus. And combine that with, as Mike so brilliantly pointed out earlier, the communist infiltration and indoctrination of the educational system at every level, you literally, with the intent of dumbing down the already, you know, intellectually challenged average American, you now have a clown world where you do, you know, regurgitate what paid liars, a gaslighting propagandist for your globalist enslaver, you take that on as your own thoughts, and you're proud to go to the microwave and heat up your breakfast burrito and talk with your fellow and wearing masks, no doubt. And it's just insane how effective it is. And hopefully, somehow, some way through divine intervention, it will fail.
Oh, Double G, you mentioned the isn't it great they're going to have people out there, hitting a ball with a stick. I mean, you know, just how much more intellectual prowess can you have than the millions of people who dote on that every day? And, folks, I've not always hated sports. I was involved in it quite a few years of my life. I was a baseball umpire in the NCAA for several years. love the sport in many ways, but
right.
I also realize now that it is a form, you know, we talk about bread and circuses. The bread is Tucker Carlson and the circus is professional sports.
Oh yeah.
You keep the people, you know, make sure you have entertainment on the lobotomy box so that these people don't dare go out anywhere and learn the truth.
Well, Mike, the Panamint Kirkansas is at an absurd level now when celebrities who are essentially, you know, their skill is they're good at pretending to be someone and having it filmed or videotaped or, well, now it's digital, and pretending they're someone else. And so the normie believes that enough to where now the level is celebrities are going to tell you who to vote for, what to eat, what to do. And now, you know, the celebrities wanted you to take the bubonic Jew jab. And now they want you to support the Ukraine, which is a Jewish initiative to take down Russia. Let's not forget that the Synagogue of Satan swore a blood libel against Germany and Russia when there was still some power to countries, and they cock-blocked the one world government of the late 19th century and the one world bank and said, no, you're not doing it. And a blood libel was sworn upon both countries. And to me, this is just continuing prosecution of that blood libel.
Great assessment.
Yeah, that is. And I would just add too that, to take down Russia and also to, sort of gobble up all of the Eastern Bloc countries into the global homo empire. And Ukraine is a great launching point and gives access to so many other countries just, you know, by its borders and its location. So I think that's the other thing that's in play. And, of course, we're not supposed to think about any of that. We're just supposed to get on board the Ukraine freedom train. And, you know, it's just you mentioned Sean Hannity earlier, DW. And this man is insane on multiple levels. And he's really urging that America should just really just go ahead and just, you know, drop a bomb on Russia and just get directly involved in this because, you know, the freedom of Ukrainians is at stake here, and that's all that matters now. I'm just absolutely blown away by his slavish devotion to his masters, but of course he's well paid for his thinking, though, isn't he?
Well, I'm fully prepared to promote war for the purpose of preserving penis playing, and yeah.
Hey, you
I'm
talk
all on
like
board.
You talk like you know what that's like, DW.
Yeah, I don't have a piano.
Oh. Oh gosh.
Well, maybe our friend Jamie Bell will let you borrow his.
Right. No. Hey, Jamie. If we've entered the ludicrous zone. Okay. Yeah. Spaceballs. Oh, yeah. That's where we're at.
Well, guys, we have to be able to laugh. If we can't laugh
Absolutely.
At this, man, we're all in trouble.
Well, if you're not laughing, you're crying in this case.
No kidding.
Well, we're down to the last couple of minutes, and I just want to give everybody a chance for some final thoughts for today. Mike, what's your final thoughts for us as we sort of leave the show and kind of enter the real world here? What are your thoughts?
Well, I would recommend to everyone out there, and I know it's not easy because I had to cross that barrier myself, but especially when the truth is not palpable, when it doesn't taste good, when it you'd rather leave it on the plate and let the dog eat it, have the courage. If people are to be free, they must have the courage to accept the truth. I don't care if it comes in your flavor or not. And as we started off the program today and we talked about, you know, the books that came from Louis Farrakhan, and I'm certainly not a fan of Mr. Farrakhan. He said one time he'd like to see all white people dead. So I'm not his friend, and I'm not promoting him. But I will promote his research, and because the research in here double-checked, triple-checked, going back, you know, just because it's in a footnote, I don't accept it. I have to go to that source and make sure what they're quoting, because anybody can put down a footnote and make it up. So I've, you know, having these books for some time, I've gone through them and I have double checked sources. And, there is one part of the, history that, he conveniently does not offer resources for, and we can talk about that at another time. I want to let everybody else have their opportunity to close out here.
Okay, DW, why don't you go next, please?
Well, I just kind of sum this up for people that are struggling with the cognitive dissonance, and we've all been there, is that if your worldview is that you don't believe in coincidence, if you believe in coincidences and you ignore contradictions, then you're clinging to the orthodoxy of hypocrisy. And with that in mind, here's the outcome of that going forward. You still might have time to change. What's happened is the nihilists, having been schooled, trained, and equipped, have now been released upon you. This is the nihilist revolution that's upon you. You paid for it, you facilitated it, and you compromised your principles to go along with it. Enjoy the bitter harvest that your cowardice fertilized. As this destruction goes forward, when you weigh your options, please don't return to your vomit as a dog. That's what dogs always do. They always want to go back after they threw up and they eat it again. Don't do it. Find a new way.
That's a great analogy there. Giuseppe, what would your final thoughts be, sir?
Well, first, it was a true honor again to do a show with Mike and Dave and yourself. And these are important truths. And as I've been saying, I never wanted to come back to the mass media in any capacity, but this, the synagogue of Satan and their war against us, you know, drew me back into it. And, I would just say, as I've said, you know, 2 years ago when I came back, the only science that's worth a damn right now is forensic science. Look at provable historical results and then you'll know the truth. You'll know the facts. Nothing that you're told by these gaslighting Satanists is worth it. And yet the entrancement is so pervasive and widespread, it's insane and literally holds billions under their sway. And so I would just ask, you know, when you're talking to people, don't get caught up in this childlike, oh, I play for the red team or I play for the blue team and all this. You know, it's worthless. Try and get people to somehow think forensically and look at actual facts, actual data, provable historical truths. And so if that can slowly happen, we have a chance. And my wife just sent me a meme that sums up who we are versus who the enemy is. And it's smart men don't tell you how smart they are. Rich men don't tell you how rich they are. Tough men don't tell you how tough they are. Honest men don't tell you how honest they are. Con men do.
Wow.
Hear, hear.
That's great. Yeah, and I'd just like to remind everybody, too, that, you know, Revolution Radio is 100% listener-supported, so come aboard revolution.radio or freedomslips.com. That's freedomslips.com. And to become a Patreon member, check out the Zazzle store. There's a whole bunch of new coffee cups that you can get to support the various shows you might like. And or scroll down to the bottom of the page, and they do have a mailing address to mail in donations the old-fashioned way. And I just want to thank everybody in the chat rooms. There's always such great information and insightful comments coming through all three of the chat rooms. And so I want to thank people for that and everyone listening. And we're down to the final couple seconds. So you know what? We've gone through 3 hours again so quickly. And this information was just, to me, fascinating and vital to understand where we are now. 3 hours down. Shoot. Bye.
interested in the paranormal, murder mystery, real natural law? You enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crypt Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Rick's hyphen cryptic. Welcome to the Crypt.
Anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard. You've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look.
It's just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, and stupidity.
I'll do you for that.
Oh, what?
Come here.
What are you going to do, bleed on me?
I'm invincible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Roundtable Live, Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.